Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Our show tonight, Hercules and the Space Gods, is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through a podcast on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in Tim Beckley's paranormal anthologies, a variety of live and now Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space God supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. Tonight, we delve the imaginal with Spaced Out with Bob Vossler. Greetings and welcome, Bob. How are you?
Doing great. Here we are in April. Year's just going by.
Yes, it is. I'm looking forward to yours and Annie's discussion about Outlander today. I know nothing about the series, so I'm preparing myself to be enlightened about it.
Okay.
I don't know why, but Annie certainly does, and that's why I asked her to be my guest tonight. Annie Brugman is a longtime friend. She's a member of Starfleet and the USS Challenger, and she's our science chief. But she's a major fan of Outlander TV series and is part of its fandom. And we'll talk about that after we go over what the show is all about, which, Annie, I know you know everything, but I'll just set it up a little bit. I know it premiered on August 9th, 2014. I didn't realize it was that far back.
Uh-huh.
Not that that's really far back, but, you know, these days. It's still on the Starz network, and it concerns Claire Randall, a nurse in World War II, who was enjoying her second honeymoon in Scotland with husband Frank, an M16 officer who was looking forward to being an Oxford historian. Suddenly, Claire is transported to 1743 and deals with a lot of a whole new life and has to survive. And she marries Jamie Fraser, a Scots warrior with a very complicated past. Outlander is adapted from the best-selling books by Diana Gabaldon. I hope I didn't botch that up.
Gabaldon.
Okay. I found out that the show has won a number of awards, two Critics Awards, two Satellite Awards, four People's Choice Awards. It was nominated for several Emmys, but didn't win any as far as I know, but, just being nominated. And it's going into its seventh season, or did it just have its seventh season?
They're going into this was season five that they just showed. I'm just trying to rack my brain and remember. This was season five. Season six is being filmed right now.
Oh, okay. Okay, because they said a season was to be run on March 14th of this year, but I don't know if that happened. That may have been written, you know, with COVID, everything is off. So I didn't know if that actually happened or not.
No.
I only briefly had Starz a few years ago. I watched one episode, and it probably wasn't the best episode to draw in, at least for me, a new viewer. But Annie, were you familiar with the book series before you started watching the series, or was it the other way around?
No, I read the books many, many years before there was even a glimmer of a TV series.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
so you were surprised that they made a show.
Well, they were trying to actually do a movie for Outlander, but the thing is, it's such a thick book and there's so much material, you can't squeeze it into a 2 or 3 hour movie. So those plans got kiboshed. A couple of times, I think a few people tried to do a TV show. That never worked. And then along came Ronald D. Moore from Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica. And his wife, who is a costume designer, her favorite book was Outlander. So he was looking for another project to work on. And Terry said to him, what about Outlander? but don't screw it up. So he was the showrunner for a number of seasons, and he successfully launched the series. And the casting choices that they've made, while Claire and Jamie, the actors who play those two characters, Katrina Balf and Sam Heughan, they may not be everybody's image of Claire and Jamie that they have in their heads from the book. However, with all the direction that they've received and all the makeup and the costumes, they've become those characters.
Well, it does seem like it is an incredible show that transcends, you know, multiple genres. It's a romance, it's a sci-fi or fantasy, it's a drama, it's historic fiction, and it's adventure. It's, you know, it's a lot of different things, and I'm sure that is what has helped make it successful, because it seems to find an appeal with different fans of different genres.
Oh, definitely. There's so many different elements in this show, like you had just said. There's also murder.
Murder mysteries.
Yeah, there's murder. Of course, there's war, because when Claire goes back in time, she goes back approximately 2 years before the Battle of Culloden, which systematically ended the clan system as we know it in the Scottish Highlands. Once that battle was lost, the Highlanders were dispersed off their lands eventually. Many people who took part in the rebellion were sent to English prisons. Many of them, their sentences were commuted, and they became indentured servants over here in America, or in the colonies, as they would call it back then. Yeah, there were no more great Highland clans left anymore.
And even though it's fictionalized a bit, I think it really tries to stick a lot to historical accuracy.
Well, the beauty thing about Diana's writing is that, well, she's got a double doctorate, and she's written a lot of technical papers. She actually also wrote for Disney Comics at one point, but she knows how to write. She knows how to research, and she just finds all of this gold as she's doing her research and puts it into the books. While she may take some artistic liberties with some of the facts to help fit the story, most of it is pretty darn accurate. And while you can't read the book and then go into a history class and say, well, this is how it happened. No, it's not really how it happened. However, it's pretty darn close. Diana knows how to research. And she's actually found some little tidbits of gold that actually fit into her story very well. There's one particular scene in the third book, Voyager, where Jamie becomes this character called the Dunbonnet, and he's hiding up in the hills above his ancestral home of Lallybroch. Well, Diana had found just a little itty-bitty piece of information in her research that there really was such a person called the Dunbonnet, and it just happened to be a Fraser. And he had hid in a cave for 7 years. So that part is true. But I'm trying not to give too much away for people who have not read the book or seen the TV series.
Now, the only, and I won't give too many spoilers on this one, but I only got to see what I briefly had stars, an episode where she actually returns. It focused on, I guess, her being back and her husband finding her. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but it probably was not the best episode for me to watch to introduce me to the show. I assume she ended up going back, but I gotta say, I felt sorry for her husband. because I've heard descriptions of Jamie, and you know, it's got to be pretty daunting to find out, oh, my wife has been remarried for several years in a different time, and now she's back, you know. So that's got to be awkward.
If the episode that I'm thinking of that you watched is the one that you saw where she came back, that was a gut-wrenching episode. If you've been following her journey throughout the series, it was just so gut-wrenching, and everything that she was experiencing, the viewer felt. But yes, there is some back and forth travel in both the books and the TV series. And not everybody can travel through the sounds. Only certain people can.
Okay, so it's something they travel through. It's not, obviously, it's not a device. It's not a mystical thing. It's something. Well, actually, maybe it is a mystical thing. I don't know.
Well, when she first goes through the stones, it's a fairy circle on top of a hill. It's called Craig na Dún. And when she approaches this one large standing stone, she hears something like a buzzing, like she's near an intense beehive. And people who are sensitive and hear this can actually physically go through the stones. So Jamie, Diana has said, will never travel through the stones. He cannot hear the buzzing. He is always stuck in whatever century. He's in the 18th century. He's stuck in the 18th century where he belongs.
Now, in that episode, I was curious of all the things to be curious about. I was curious how much time elapsed for her while she was away, and did it match the amount of time that when she came back? You know, like if she was away for
2 years. It was about 2 years.
Okay.
But you have to think that a lot can happen in 2 years.
Oh, sure. Yep.
And a lot did happen to them.
I was going to ask originally if the seasons were adapting the books per season, but I already found out the answer to that, which the show has, well, at least season one, had 16 episodes, and I guess it was based on the book Outlander, and then we go from Dragonfly and Amber, Voyager, Drums of Autumn, and I guess
and
this last season was The Fiery Cross, and the next two is The Breath of Snow and Ashes and Echo in the Bone.
In the Bone. Correct.
Now, are those all the books, or is there more, hopefully?
There's more, and she just finished writing the ninth book. So that's going to be out, I don't know exactly when, because she just finished writing it just days ago. And now it has to go through the whole editorial process, which is a process and takes time. So we may see the book possibly next year, but that will be the ninth book. The first season, which they based on exclusively the first book, they divided it up into two half seasons. So it was 8 episodes in the first half and 8 episodes in the second half. And they followed the book very, very closely. There were some things that they had to change because of environment. Some things happened in the snow, but when they were filming, there was no snow. So they had to change some things. The second season, Dragonfly and Amber, that was only 12 episodes. And so they had to cram a lot more into those episodes, and a lot kind of got left out, which was a shame, but they tried to keep in as much of the essence of the book as possible. Same thing with Voyager. They did cut out a large portion of Voyager, but that wasn't essential to the actual story. It was just highlighting what Claire and Jamie had gone through, but I mm-hmm. think they did a good job with adapting it. Season 4, Drums of Autumn, they did differ quite a bit from the books, but it was still very well done. Season 5, Fiery Cross, they actually started bringing in elements of the 6th book, A Breath of Snow and Ashes, which is what will be the next season. So it was interesting that they started bringing in those elements. So that's going to be quite fascinating to see how the changes will be.
Well, it's nice to know that the author is still working on writing more books. Because I think we're both fans of Game of Thrones and how frustrating that was to learn that, you know, that he had stopped writing the book and here is this is a series that is definitely, you know, finite and was designed to have an ending and he was very much involved with the production of the show and yet didn't follow through to write the book too, they had to take their own course in concluding it. And some people feel that it didn't conclude the way they wanted it to.
No, so many fans are saying remake the last season. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Now, what appeals to you most about the show? I mean, I know you like the romance. I know you probably enjoy the sci-fi and the mystery. But, you know, is there one element in particular, or are you just enjoying the fact that it just keeps coming back with, you know, even though you've been reading the books or read the books?
I do enjoy that, but I'm in love with all things Scottish. So mm-hmm. what's nice is that Scotland is front and center for quite a bit of the show. And what's really interesting that many people may not know is that even the scenes that are filmed in supposedly in Paris and in the colonies, that's all done on their studio property in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
Nothing is filmed in the United States. Nothing was filmed in Paris. They have gone to a couple of different locations in different countries to get like outside shots of something that was going to make a grand impression that they couldn't replicate in studio or anywhere in Scotland. If you do some behind the scenes research, it's very interesting to see how they can actually take something and then morph it into something much grander. Like when they come to the colonies and Jamie goes to visit his Aunt Jocasta, she's at this plantation called River Run. Well, they found this really nice house just on a little inlet, but River Run has this huge river that runs by it, hence the name River Run. Mm-hmm. And they did some very interesting opticals with the house to make it look much grander. And then they also did some very clever matte painting and with graphics to make it look like there's this whole big river that just goes right by the plantation.
Oh, wow.
So they really are technical geniuses with this. They have some of the best people working on this show.
I had forgotten that Ronald Moore was actually, you know, the showrunner on this.
Yep.
And of course that's a stamp of, you know, professionalism right there from those of us who were fans of his work in Star Trek and, of course, Battlestar Galactica from the new version of Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
Usually anything he touches is, you know, well done, well researched, you know, and visually incredible and well acted.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, this is also a show that, you know, as we said before, so transcends the different genres that seeing it at a romance novel convention or a sci-fi convention or anything. I mean, a few years ago when I worked at another place that we're familiar with the library, they were planning a whole program. And I even though I knew nothing about it, this is before I actually got to see it, I was really, you know, with my own small voice at that point in time in the role that I was in, was pushing the fact that, hey, this is something big. This is something popular that you'll want to base a program around, because they wanted to replicate the success that they had with the Downton Abbey program. And they were trying to get, and I think at one point they thought they had her, the author. But she was in Scotland, so I don't know how they thought they could afford to bring her over unless she was planning to travel and then those plans changed.
She lives in Arizona. That's where her home is.
I didn't realize that. I don't know what
her travel plans were, because she's made multiple trips to Scotland. And she does a lot of different book tours. So I don't know what her plans were, where she was going to be when the library wanted to do that. But I remember putting the word out to all of my Outlander friends, and the library was going to have a boatload of volunteers to help.
Yeah, I remember that. It was exciting. It looked like it was a done deal. It was very disappointing to find out that, I guess, something changed. They did end up doing a much smaller Scottish Fest or Scots Fest or whatever they called it. Not quite the same, but I believe they did throw in some Outlander. I don't recall now. But you know, it is part of a lot of different, you know, groups. And that brings us to the fact that, like everything, it has its own special fandom, and you are a part of that. And you've done a number of panels at various conventions and special events. And some with our mutual friend from Starfleet, Maggie Restivo, and you've taken part in, I believe, their special teas or you know, book discussions, or you know, maybe you could describe what that is and you know, a little bit about that and how you got involved with that.
Well, the book club, before COVID, we were meeting at the Monmouth County Public Library, right across from the Target in Manalapan. So
yeah,
we were meeting there.
Library.
I'm sorry?
Their headquarters library, yeah.
Yes. So we were meeting there the second Thursday of every month. But once COVID hit, that got shut down. So the book club went in there, meeting on Facebook now, same bat time, same bat station, so to speak. I haven't really taken part in that, only because I got involved in something else on Thursdays. But we also were getting together for teas at various tea houses. And we actually are getting together in mid-May, now that things are starting to relax a little bit and open. A bunch of us are getting together for a nice little gathering at a tea house in Ocean Grove. But yes, we try and do all these really nice high teas around the holidays, or have one in the spring, and it's a nice get together. We'll do a gift exchange at the holidays. We try and play some trivia games. People make little favors and giveaways. So it's a lot of fun. And we've really gotten very close as a group.
That's
been fun.
And a nice way to celebrate something that you enjoy, you know. And it's cultural as well. And I'm sure, you know, with tea, there's also scones and, you know, other British
food. Oh, my goodness, yes. We do the high tea with the finger sandwiches, the brilliant little desserts, oh, the scones with the clotted cream and raspberry jam. Oh, it's so good. We actually do have a couple of men in our club, too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so Outlander just isn't a women's thing. If you're telling a good story, it's a good story.
Well, absolutely. Just like Downton Abbey as well, because I remember, you know, for that event at our local library, you know, predominantly it was a lot of women, but you know, there were some men there, and I, being one of the fans of that show, I was very happy to be part of that. But I'm glad that men were represented for this as well.
We have about two or three men. There might even be more that might join us when we start meeting in person again. We would always go to the Applebee's there in the parking lot where the Wegmans is. We'd have our supper there, and then we'd go over to the library, and we would meet, and we would just have a really good old time just talking about the books. We would read certain sections of the book, like when we were starting out when Outlander first premiered. We read Outlander, and then we kind of took chapters and did deep dives into it, which really helped because Diana put so much into her books that she might do something that you think is a little throwaway scene, but yet in maybe three or four books down the line, you'll read something and say, oh, my gosh, she referenced that in the first book. Yeah. Yeah, she puts a lot of little Easter eggs. It's funny. She even kind of writes herself into the books as well. In Voyager, she was detailing how somebody was packing up a bunch of things from a mansion in Scotland in their present day, and he came across this beautiful silver tea set, and he turned it over to see who the maker's mark was, who did it, and what was the maker's mark? DG. So she writes herself in. A name of one of the ships in Voyager was, I believe the name was the Diana. Or it was something very close to that. I can't quite remember. But every once in a while, she'll write herself into the story. Just
subtly. Now, is she listed as any kind of, beyond the fact that it's adapted, you know, to her novels, is she in any way like a consultant on the show or?
Oh, yes, no. she was very much a consultant on the show. In fact, both she and Ron Moore had cameos in the first season.
Oh, wow.
Yep, and it was funny because Diana actually had a very small speaking part, and her name was, she got to choose her name, her name was Iona McTavish, which we thought was very, very funny because when we're first introduced to Jamie in Outlander, he's known as Jamie McTavish. So she chose the name Iona, and it's a play on words. I own a McTavish.
Very clever. Very clever.
Yep. So she was, it's funny because she went on record saying when she first saw Sam's audition tape, she is like, no, that is not Jamie Fraser. No way. But as filming went on and they transformed him to look more like the character with the hair and the clothing, she's like, damn, that is Jamie Fraser.
And, you know, I can't get out of my head when I hear all these references to Jamie Fraser. My first thought is of the second Doctor's companion for most of the time of Patrick Troughton's run on Doctor Who was a young Scotsman named Jamie, and his real name was Fraser Hines. So.
Okay, well, what goes around comes around, because in one of the later episodes in season one, Fraser Hines had a cameo.
Really? Oh, my God, I didn't know that. That is That is so nice. Yep. That is so appropriate.
You did. Well, Diana's Outlander does have its roots firmly planted in sci-fi because Diana was getting ready to write a book. She was writing a book on a dare because she said, I can write a novel. And she was like, okay, fine. I said, I'm going to write a novel. Now what do I want to write about? She happened to see that one episode of Doctor Who with Patrick Troughton where he picks this young Scotsman, Jamie, off of the Culloden battlefield. She's like, ooh, that's a really good time to set a novel in. Ooh, a man in a kilt. I like a man in a kilt. And she said, Jamie, I like that name, Jamie. And then I forgot how she came across the name Fraser, but that's how she got the inspiration for the character and the story.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Uh-huh. And then Fraser Hines, he played the warden of Wentworth's prison, and that was in the second to last episode of season one. So that was pretty cool.
I didn't know he was still acting. He was the last time the character was in anything was in the 1980s when Colin Baker's Sixth Doctor, they did a story called The Two Doctors, and it paired him with Patrick Troughton and Jamie, who they just pretended that they were just the same age, even though Patrick Troughton's hair was gray and they didn't even try to disguise it. And Jamie was wearing the same, costume. He looked, fairly similar, but obviously older. So I thought that was, but that was in the 80s. So I can imagine how old he must be now.
Right.
But that is very cool. I'm glad you shared that old background. I had no idea.
Yep.
Which is another reason why it's so popular, interconnected with all our fellow fans, at events like Shore Leave how many different panels have you done here and there? I mean, I know you've done them for within our organization, but I know you've done at least one at Shore Leave, possibly a Farpoint. I don't know.
Done, I want to say at least four or five now, easily. I think I've probably been doing the Outlander panels with Maggie and then our friend Maddie for about maybe 5 years, 5 years now, maybe six.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I did the Outlander panel at the event at the library, the Scotland event at the library. I did the panel there.
That's right. I'm the one who pitched you for that. I was kind of like your agent.
Yes.
And we both got paid the same amount.
Yes, we did. A big fat zilch. That's okay. It was fun doing it. It was a lot of fun doing that. But yeah, I'll talk about Outlander whenever somebody asks me. I'm like, okay, I'm all ears. What do you want to know? Not that I'm an expert, but I know more than the average person who is just coming off the street, so to say, and is like, okay, tell me about this show. Another thing that Diana does incredibly well, and Maggie has said this many, many times, Diana writes animals beautifully. And Maggie has said the only other person that she can relate to that writes animals as well as Diana does is James Herriot, All Creatures Great and Small.
Mm.
What's nice about Diana is that she doesn't anthropomorphize her animal characters. They are true to their natures.
Oh.
They're
and
true
then
to
I also
their
had the original the original series of that has another Doctor Who connection had Peter Davison in it in the original. I believe they redid
right.
All Creatures.
Yes, I did catch a few episodes of the of the most latest All Creatures Great and Small that aired on PBS, and I found that very good and very entertaining. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, I happened to come across it, and I thought that they were simply rerunning the old show. So I got excited there for a bit. So, you know, I was starting to look for Peter Davison. And then I kind of realized, no, this looks a little bit more updated than the, I guess, yeah, it had to be the 1970s. Because
right.
Peter Davison, I believe, became the Doctor or was at least cast in 1979.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, and he had darker hair and, you know, because he became more blonde for the, when he took over for Tom Baker.
Right.
Not the easiest job to do. But the Brits just do, you know, some remarkable, you know, because of the culture, you know, do some remarkable productions. You know, the other night with there being, I guess, because it was a holiday weekend and nobody wanted to put new episodes on, I found myself watching one of my Dollar Tree purchases of a ghost story. And it was The Taming of the Shrew. And it was a genuine BBC-produced production. And it was like a Downton Abbey reunion because, and I can't think of all the actors' names, but the star of the show, the nanny, was Mary from Downton Abbey, and her psychiatrist. I don't want to give too much away if anybody watches it, but you know where she is has to be. She has to have a little talking to from a psychiatrist, happened to be the actor who played her first husband.
Oh, interesting.
In Downton Abbey. Yes. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And another cast member was the woman who worked for the Dowager, you know, it was the busybody maid or, you know, governess or whatever her position was, who drove that poor butler crazy. I think she ended up getting fired finally, didn't she? But she,
I don't know.
She was in it.
Believe it or not, I have never watched one episode of Downton Abbey.
Oh, really? Wow.
Really?
So, yeah. So we're almost the same, except that I did catch one Outlander episode.
But getting back to Outlander and animals, two animal characters that are quite outstanding in the series are this wolf dog named Rollo, which belongs to Jamie's nephew Ian, and then Adso, the little kitten that Jamie finds along the way. They become really good characters, and she writes them so charmingly. And then they have, when they're here in America, in North Carolina, they have this very large white sow that lives under the house. Very, very mean pig. And she, it's just amazing how she writes these animals.
Aww.
It's incredible.
Like the show that has some animals, you know, in them. And it sounds like they have actual roles, like, you know, storylines or part of a storyline.
Right. Well, one of the animals that they have is Clarence, a donkey, and he definitely has a personality in the books because he's the first one that greets everybody when they come. If there's somebody coming to Fraser's Ridge to the big house, you know that there's somebody there because Clarence is braying his fool head off. He's got a definite role in the story. One of the horses that Claire rides, his name is Judith, and he totally lives up to his name. He's an ornery, cantankerous animal, and, yeah, he dumps Claire the first opportunity that he gets and runs away. Yep.
And it isn't always easy to have animals in a show. It takes, you know, a trainer, it takes, you know, it takes a lot of, you know, patience to shoot scenes, I'm sure, because I'm sure the animals don't always cooperate. So that's kind of added another element to it as well.
Right.
Now, does every season basically run for, you know, and I'm sure in the books it would be the same because it's what it's based on, but is there like a span of time that flows? Like, does one season maybe, you know, is there a time passage, I guess what I'm asking, or is it just basically season to season, book to book, like basically a year or so, or maybe less?
So are you asking how time passes in the Outlander world or how time passes show to book? Or book to show?
Basically show to book. Like, you know, like basically when we watch a TV show, your average show, it seems like, you know, it's a season long is a year long, even if it's only 13 episodes.
I understand what you're saying.
It's not all cases, but so I'm asking, like, is, you know, or, you know, being that this is kind of epic in scope, you know, and I know that they're married, you know, would they, you know, is the passage of time through this show been, you know, the same or, you know, roughly about the same as the series itself, which is going into season six, I believe. So would all the events be, you know, within 6 years or maybe less or maybe more?
Oh, I see what you mean. No, we're talking a span of probably close to 30 years now because again, trying not to give too much away for the uninitiated, there's a 20-year gap in there.
Ah,
in the book.
I see. Okay.
There's a 20-year gap. I don't want to give anything away because obviously I can't see by a show of hands who's seen it, who's seen the show,
yeah,
who's read the book. But, yeah, so we're probably talking close to a 30-year span. And obviously by the time book 9 comes out, it's going to be many, many more years.
Okay. I was just curious about that because certain shows, like, you know, aforementioned Downton Abbey or, you know, I was watching reruns of the Waltons today during lunch. And, you know, I know sometimes they would jump 6 months ahead and, you know, they basically stayed in the 30s until around the time of World War II. And then they, you know, they got into the, you know, the early 40s into 1945. So, you know, I was just kind of curious. I figured with a show that involved time travel and, you know, being a historic type of show, that they might, you know, fluctuate.
Right.
Sorry about the
cameo. There is there's definitely a 20-year gap in there. And there's a lot of things going on within those 20 years on both sides.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with a lot of Scottish history, but, you know, I know that there must be some major events that were probably, you know, covered and changes of kings or government, you know, things like that.
Right. And of course, now that they're over here in the colonies, now we're into the Revolutionary War.
Oh, okay. So now that the setting isn't in Scotland, it's actually in the colonies, huh?
Correct. Even though it's being filmed entirely in Scotland, it is set in the Americas.
Hmm. Well, imagine that Scotland being as beautiful as it is, you know, it's probably cheaper to film that way, and it's probably more accurate to film there. I would imagine there's just beautiful areas that provide a better backdrop, you know, than what we could even have here.
Right. Well, in season 4, Drums of Autumn, Jamie and Claire make a trek from North Carolina up to New York State. And some of the areas that they filmed in that were the backdrop for New York State, you would have thought you were in the Adirondacks.
Hmm.
You know, they do such a good job of scoping out locations for a lot of the indigenous peoples that were in season four. They actually brought mm-hmm. in indigenous peoples from Canada, some from the States, it wasn't just like Hollywood of years ago. They would get people of Italian descent or people of Hispanic descent to play Native Americans. No, these were actually indigenous peoples playing indigenous peoples.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And are the actors themselves, I would imagine they're probably British actors. I don't think there's any Americans in the cast.
They're mostly all from the UK. Katrina, who plays Claire, she's Irish. Sam, who plays Jamie, he is Scottish. Let's see. Brianna, Sophie Skelton, she's British. Rick Rankin, who plays Roger, he's also a Brit. No, he's a Scot. I'm sorry. He's a Scot.
I know there's somebody whose real last name, I believe, is McTavish.
Oh, yes, Graham McTavish. He played Dougal McKenzie.
Yeah, I was like, wow, he's got two great names. His real name is stereotypical Scottish names. I was like, well, gee, you know, that name could work either way.
Right. But no, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There are no American actors that I am aware of that are in the cast. I could be wrong, but I don't believe so.
But yeah, I was looking through the Wikipedia and some sources there, and looking at some of the faces, I'm better with faces than sometimes matching up the names. And I looked at everybody and like, they don't look familiar. I mean, other than my watching that first episode, they look like a very attractive looking cast, you know, but I just didn't see any familiar faces and those in British dramas tend to recirculate in everything, you know, from Downton Abbey to Doctor Who to a bunch of different things.
In Voyager, Claire decides to go back to, she decides to go to school to become a doctor, to become a surgeon. And she's in a class with this young African-American man. The character's name is Joe Abernathy. The actor's name escapes me, but you know, he has a brilliant American accent. He's from New Zealand.
Oh.
So Sophie Skelton, who plays Brianna, she is, while she's British, she does quite a good American accent.
Yeah, it's amazing how some British actors can just drop the accent, you know, like we've seen that with, you know, actors in, you know,
well, look at, for example, Hugh Laurie, House.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter Laurie is a great example. And the sheriff, you know, Rick from, Walking Dead, you know, nobody would have expected, you know, like that he's British or, you know, Our current Spider-Man, Tom Holland.
Tom Holland, yeah.
You know, whenever I hear him interviewed, or Superman for that matter, you know, like, you know.
Right.
It's like when all our superheroes become Brits, you know.
And it's very funny when you see them on talk shows and you expect to hear one voice, but another comes out of their mouth. It's like, what? Mind blown.
Yeah, and the reverse, you know, sometimes is good. And as much as I adore Katie Sackhoff, I did hear her once for a recurring character that she did on the TV series The Flash. Can't really do a British accent to save her life. No. Great in a lot of other respects, but I was like, no, this just doesn't work. You know? But then again, Roddy McDowell couldn't do a good Southern accent either. So, you know, and I adore them. So. But where do you see the series, you know, going at this point? It looks like the cast is very happy with what they're doing. You know, like you always worry, especially with British shows, that some of the main cast people get tired and they want to leave, but it doesn't look like that's happened. So that's good, you know.
Well, you have to think that foremost, they are professionals. They've dedicated their time and their energy to these characters that have become so well known. I do not believe they're being typecast because Sam has been in a number of different movies. He did that one movie, Bloodshot, with Vin Diesel. He was in The Spy Who, the what the heck was it? That spy movie with Kate McKinnon.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I saw it. It was a very funny movie. So he's very good in other roles that he plays. Although in Bloodsport, he had an American accent. It was okay. It was okay. Katrina, she's been doing various projects. But also you have to think that first and foremost, it is a very steady paycheck for them.
Yeah. And I would imagine it's a good one at that because, you know, it looks like it's a very well-polished production, you know, and with Ronald Moore involved, you know, it definitely has some bucks going there. And
what's nice is that because it's on a cable network, they've got a little bit more money to throw at it. They can
take time to do
Game of Thrones. The one episode that they did, The Battle of the Bastards, oh, my God, that was one of the more standout episodes with everything that was going on. And you talk about putting money into something with so much detail and so many people. I mean, how many episodes of Game of Thrones did we see with Daenerys and her dragons?
Yeah.
I mean, that was top quality special effects. So that's what
you
get.
After a while, I think we just watched it and just thought, well, you know, they feed the dragons after filming, you know, because
exactly.
It looks so realistic. It looks so realistic.
And you wonder,
you know,
and you think, I wonder if they pay the people that wrangle those dragons enough money. No, they're not real.
Well, I do remember that, you know, that was part of the financing was even with Torchwood, they were trying to get that connected to Stars, I believe. And it might have been in the last.
It was on Stars for a while.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's got it's got a healthy future. I know there's several more, you know, at least two more seasons in production and she's working on another book. So, you know, I'm hoping that it's with us for quite a while. I know that will, you know, make...
There's also talk about possible spinoff series like Lord John Grey. He's a major character through a lot of the books, and there's talk of potentially a spinoff series with him. Nothing is, of course, cast in concrete and stone about it. There was a character in Voyager, Master Raymond, who showed up in Paris, and there's talk about maybe him coming back for his own show or at least a series of books.
Oh, wow, that's very cool that he could spin off literally and you know, and on TV. Real quick, you know, we're Trekkies and Trekkers. There's Doctor Who fans or Whovians. What are Outlanders? Are you Outlanders or are you just, you know, is there a special name?
Well, because Jamie calls Claire Sassenach. Sassenach it translates literally to Outlander. So most of us that are fans of Outlander wear Obsessinax.
Okay.
Because we're obsessed, and it's about Obsessinax, and so we're Obsessinax.
Oh,
I hate to intrude on this point, but we have less than 5 minutes left, so we need to wrap
okay.
up. But now I want to see Outlander, so thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Oh, and just real quick, where can you see Outlander? I mean, when's the next season start
The next
for
season
Outlander?
Won't be filmed until next year. But right now, I believe seasons 1 through 4 are actually available on Netflix.
Okay.
And if you have Stars or have the Stars app, you can see all the episodes there as well.
Okay, so they'll be filming next year. Oh man, so you won't.
Well, no, they're filming right now. They're filming right now, but we may not see it until sometime next year. And I believe season 7 has been confirmed that they are going to be doing a season 7.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I knew, Annie, that you would make a fantastic guest and you could inform us all about Outlander and, you know, and stories that I never even, you know, knew to connect with, featuring, you know, my other fave, which being Doctor Who. So, you know, I thank you for joining me tonight and enlightening us on the Outlander and giving us a glimpse at Outlander fandom. You know, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It is. I've made a lot of good friends through Outlander.
Is there any central, you know, way to connect other Outlander fans to this group who might be listening? You know, and of course we're listening beyond New Jersey.
If you go to Facebook, there's a lot of groups on Facebook that are for Outlander. Our group has changed names a few times. But if you just look under New Jersey Outlanders, you'll pretty much find us and you'll find a couple of other groups as well.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you again. And
you're welcome.
And I will see you on Sunday, Zoom-wise.
Yes. Yes, looking forward to it. All right. Well, thank you so much, Bob. Thank you, Hercules. And I really felt very honored to be a guest on your show.
And thank you, Annie.
All right. See you guys soon.
Okay. Thanks again.
Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
And thank you again, Annie, and thank you, Bob. It was an awesome episode, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Thanks to everybody at home, too, whether you tuned in live or whether you'll be joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we'll wrap up If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake, dream till you feel, dream till you know it, dream till it's real.